time to perform the rituals of Umrah and doing the tawafs around the Kaaba. My initial sort of a caveat was, are people making the Kaaba now an idolatrous thing, even without having the statues inside? And the message came very clearly, no. They are praising the ideal that Abraham had brought of the worship of a non-form God. It's embodied. That's the shell of that ideal. And so, okay, I began. We had a mutawaf who looked very much like Bala, who held my hand tightly, which is uncustomary. We had a little group. There were six of us. And he began to say the words and the prayers and the qualities and whatever. I came with only a few surahs that I had memorized, and they were not appropriate for this. And he was the one that I was to follow. And I spoke them, and I spoke them, and I spoke them. And it must have been by the time I was doing the fifth tawaf of the seven that the felicitous understanding came that the soul within me was there in prayer, but I saw my soul in eternity. And because there is no way to pre-think something like that, it's like a glory. It's like, oh. So that was one of the gifts of the Umrah. Another time, I had this wonderful little symbolic understanding of me floating free like a kite, but that God was holding the string. And it was so sweet. It was such a sweet understanding. Floating free like a kite, but God holding the string. The next time that great number of people were going from the fellowship, because by now people were really getting awake to the fact that this is not just a thing to do. Something wonderful could happen for you in that focus where nothing else is. Because in fact, the only show in town is going to prayers at the mosque, either in Mecca or Medina. That's it. That's the wonder. That's the thing you wait for the next walk. And I thought, well, I had already received everything. Why would I ever go again? But then I saw duty, because there were like 55 of our kids, and I wanted to be of help if it was needed. So with that understanding, I signed on to go. And indeed, help was needed. There was a terrible snowstorm, and the airplanes couldn't leave. And now we were spending the first 2 days of Umrah in New York City. Not what anybody expected. And it shook some people a little. And those are the people that I stayed very near. And we did our prayers. We did everything that we would have done having gotten to Saudi Arabia. And we did it in the Sheraton Hotel. Well, finally, they got that thing ready. And because what had happened was when they finally moved an airplane and they were going to get us out, the airplane's windshield had a crack in it. It was a design, really, it was a design of all kinds. And then another airplane slipped across the runway that was to be used by the Saudi airplane. There was a long runway because there was so much fuel needed. And so when they had to use a shorter runway, we had to have less fuel, and now there was that problem. And it was like, oh, really? This is how this was intended to be. Nevertheless, we finally did get to Saudi Arabia, and we did come to the beauty of Mecca and Medina, and everybody received. But a beautiful, beautiful thing happened for me that was not exactly what I had received in the beginning. On a night, and the nights are where everything is, really. I was just standing near the steps and looking at the Kaaba and looking at the moon over the Kaaba and the star near it, and the birds were flying in and flying out. There was a beautiful butterfly on the covering, and I was just bucolic and loaded with love. And again, in that way that the inner begins to speak to you, it said, you know, that power has a heart. I said, oh, right. That power has a heart. And it's because of that heart that all of creation came. It really tumbled from the heart of God. And that heart never loses its contact with that which fell out of it. And I was so happy. It was so right. It was such a glorious reward. And then the understanding of the real meaning of the Sacred Heart was made. It was sacredness in completion. But everything that emerged into creation has a little piece of that sacredness, a little piece of that Sacred Heart. If we focus on it, and if we nurture it, it's like everything else, it gets bigger. It gets bigger because of our focus. And so on it went, the happiness, the love, and all of that. Finally, that was the fruit of what had been started, really, in 1972. Now, the importance of understanding how we overcome illness, old age, and death is that once we find that which is like God in us, it doesn't have a form, it doesn't get sick and die. It's like that eternal soul that I saw or realized. It's forever. And that's the alliance that we want to make in this life, is with our soul, not with the body. It's not that the body doesn't have a great and noble task. It does. After all, it has enclosed all of this knowledge and all of the gift. We should do our best to keep it well. And we should do our best to live as long as we can. But in fact, the part that will never die is the place where we really want to be allied. We don't want to be that which is corruptible and which can fall to pieces. The body matters as long as it can, encasing all that which has been given. But in the end, it doesn't matter. Only that matters. That inside peace that came from the heart of that power. And I keep that realization as the backdrop for every single thing all the time. It doesn't go away. Interestingly, when I thought about what happens in a change of consciousness in the early days? I said, oh, it must be, because this was what I was familiar with, it must be like standing on a stage and having the scrim go up, and now the scene is behind you and all around you. You're the actor in it, and you're standing there, and then that scene is over. And the the pieces of scenery are removed and another scene is there. And in that scene, you know something different. And you as an actor are doing something that pertains to the new scene. And it seemed to me that the curtains were going up and the scenery was moving and everything was changing a lot during those years. The consciousness was changing. And if you're a creature of habit, and I'm a creature of habit, and habit is the biggest enemy you will ever have on this path, you won't like it. I had the happiness one time of reading one of the portions of the Paradiso of Dante's Divine Comedy, and in it Beatrice, who was his understanding of wisdom, was leading him through the heavens, and I think he didn't want to go from the fourth to the fifth heaven, and he was happy where he was. And she said, but don't you remember you didn't want to go from the third to the fourth heaven? Were you? So that, with that in mind, I was very, very finding it very necessary to find things to bolster me up as I was leaving places of comfort to go to more discomfort. And you know what? I'm done with that. I know that I'm never going to be comfortable in that way in this life. No, it's not the thing. It's not the thing to be comfortable there. That's the end of your journey, and that's really not the end of your journey. So it's with all of these wonderful, wonderful understandings that I come to my daily life. And I didn't want to ignore something that was really very, very sweet about Bowie's interchange with the children, with the little children, which was ongoing. He was extremely careful to make sure that the children knew him as their friend and their teacher. And really from early on, my own children had instant rapport of different kinds. See, I was not one of those people who said, you must do this and you must do that. There were certain things that were written into the script, but really, I thought that a sane child would do things that they saw were being done by their parents, and it would be all right. And so I took them with me, all five of them, to Guru Bowie's. Now, this was a happening that took place February 29th, 1972. And my son, Leif Owen Klein, had come home from school that day, plunked his books on the dining room table, and he said, I can't deal with it anymore. He said, this teacher is driving me crazy. She was an old teacher who really was ready to retire, and she was not really any longer able to cope with those young children. And it was coming out in various ways. And he said, I have to go to Guru Bawa, he said, and ask him to help me. So I thought, oh, that's good. And I had just gone to Bawa in January, the early part of January. And this is February. So the children were already in the mode of understanding where help could come from. And I thought, yes, Bawa will tell him what to do. I will tell him what to do. Well, Bawa heard him out that evening, and he said, it's the teacher's fault. Oh, I said, oh, great. It's the teacher's fault. Now what? And he said, I'm going to write a letter to the teacher from Leif. And this is the letter. And each and every part of it is numbered the way the Quran is numbered. It says, please, teacher, you are like our mother, number one. You are a mother to my knowledge. It is from the knowledge you teach us that we will be able to lead a good life. Moses and Jesus preached us knowledge through love and compassion. Jesus has said, send before me the children for they can be taught the truth. Both Moses and Jesus preached us truth through love and compassion. Please, teacher, you must impart knowledge through love and compassion. Do not threaten me or frighten me, as this fear distracts my learning. Please, teacher, treat me with love and teach me with compassion. Please, teacher, I look upon you as a mother who imparts knowledge. As I cannot express this openly to you, I am writing it down. Please forgive me for Jesus' sake. Now, I don't know. The teacher took the letter, and she was transformed. She showed it to every teacher in school and took it to the principal. And Leif Owen's life was heaven with her after that. He was the only one she invited to her pool. Now, the power of a man who took the time, this was this unbelievable gift to all of us. He had time for everyone, and no one escaped his gaze. Everyone was seen all of the time. And all of the discourses were given so that somebody at every level would receive something that would help them go forward a little, at least. Sometimes, you know, it could be tedious, but one had to be very, very forbearant and patient, knowing full well that we were what he called God's funny family. And indeed, really, we were God's funny family and are. Not stamped out by a cookie cutter. The most glorious thing that he permanently gave to us was the zikr that had to do with the first kalima, La ilaha illallah, which floated on the breath. And one breathed out that which was not God and breathed in that which was divine. And it went on and on. And as far as he was concerned, our understanding would be complete when we understood that with every single breath, we were in fact saying the kalima. So for the 42,243 breaths a day, that's who we are. We're breathing a breath that God gave to all creation. It's divine breath. And when we breathe it in, this divine breath goes through all of this pile of dust that we are and makes it divine. That's how we can receive it best. And working up time in the day so that it finally becomes the unconscious underlying knowledge that never varies, it never stops being. It's always there as the God running through us. Because the breath is God's own metaphor for himself. It's that which I prize. The little understandings, the big understandings, the bursting open of places inside where a cell breaks into another and another and another, and the expectation is endless. I mean, it's thrilling. So I've been on the way for 29 years, and this year was one of the biggest years of my life. Nothing gets dull. I think that that's pretty much what I came to tell you and what you came to hear. And so if there are any questions, I'd be really happy to hear them. It's good. And the gratitude is so, so full. I really never thought I was going to be one of those people that went around all day saying, thank you, God, thank you, God, thank you, thank you. It just falls out of me all the time. And it's not a thought. It really, it's done without. It's whatever. It just keeps happening because I'm so glad. Yes?
With Baba's passing, how did the fellowship change?
Not at all. There were some who had the beginnings of difficulties before he passed with, you know, one or another of us. I want it this way, you want it that way. And when you look at the passing of some of the great prophets and you see what happened after that, you can sort of know that there's going to be work. But I felt that there were enough of us who could just keep steering that ship, that fellowship, the way Baba had, and that Baba himself would be in it. And that has never stopped. The power of that soul to take care of us with the passing of the body has been quite complete. And he said before he was ever to pass, he said, the entire fellowship will be me. It's almost like, you know, Jesus saying, how the church would be the embodiment. It's very hard, it's almost ineffable to say how that happens. It is ineffable. But it does happen. And there is the same way that the direct message comes from the divine to the human being who has emptied. There is just the open hand that waits for what is to be given. And we're doing quite nicely, thank you. Yes?
There is plenty of learning to be done to occupy us in community. Plenty of learning to occupy our time and mind. As far as the practical things, besides practicing and the actual thinking, as a community to occupy us. There are important things also that are to be done for community.
Yes.
Not only a message, but also to extend also the great community.
You know, it was a very big surprise to me about 2 years ago, I guess. One focuses so mightily on trying to be all the things that we are learning that it had escaped me as to what was the more important thing, and shocking to find out that God valued a community more than a single individual. That was. Then I looked at it and I said, well, of course. The community passes the message in volume down to the generations. It does a work while it's there. And I actually had an amazing thing happen the first time I went into the mosque. I went in without anybody having given me any kind of instruction. And I said to the inner knower, I will go in if you will answer my questions. And I walked in and I sat down and I said, now why am I here? And it said, you are in a space that is simply a space. It doesn't have any statues and things to distract you. It is purely for prayer in communion. Is that all right? And I said, yes. Then I said, what about this choreography of the bows and the way that's done? Why? And the answer came, well, there are people all over the world who come from different cultural backgrounds, and one could encroach on the consciousness of another during prayer in a way that might not be good. Isn't it better that everybody does this very, very simple gesture of the bows? And the, and I said, oh yes, that's good. And then I said, why should I have to come to a large group to pray when I get so much from the solitary prayer? And there was like this outrage, and it said, get, this is meant for you to give. This is what you give. Wouldn't you want to be a part of a large group who make known my name and my being? Wouldn't you want to take away from the distractions of the world and belong to this group that comes here in prayer for me? And I said, oh yes. And that did it. That job that a community does when it's real, because there are a lot of communities that are sort of fake, and we won't have to talk about that fakery, but a really sincere community that comes in the name of God to simply give obeisance, open the heart, and carry the message that there is indeed this power that empowers us all, and say the many ways in which this happens, because that's what happens in the recitations, no matter where you find them. That's a very, very great thing. But it never disconnects from the divine. The community's work should never, never take on the business of the world. The community that belongs in this mode is a community that is exercising all the 99 great qualities that have been told us. And the blessings have to be observed by a knowing inner heart. Does that answer? Not quite. Well, what is the piece that's missing? Oh. Yes.
Maybe it's similar to hers. Is we're here. I'm wondering what the purpose of life is. It's to serve God, but it's also to serve
each other.
Each other, and so it almost seems like. There's a part of you that wants to dissolve into this ineffable substance, this essential self, and then, having been there, to come back into this world of form,
yes,
and to try to
do right things.
To do right things, and to honor everyone where they are.
Right.
It,
that's right.
And just do the dance with the shadow. I mean, because we're hearing a lot at this conference, especially from Andrew Harvey, about the suffering of the planet, and that consciousness has to be raised to a higher level, and I think that's why the Sufi thing is emerging, and so many of the enlightened teachings are emerging.
Absolutely.
So that we in the West can hopefully evolve spiritually at a vibration that can take that material and that spiritual in resonance so that we can sustain.
That's exactly right.
Form with the spirit. And I don't know. It's. I don't think the intellect can understand how to do it. Do you have a gift of awareness that you might want to pass on?
Well, it seemed to me, by the example that I saw, that every good word and every good deed continues to vibrate out. That there is no question about the fact that it doesn't stay where it started. So as many of those things that we float out there, that's how many good things will happen for the planet. And I'm not one of those people who starts to count up, you know, anything like that, but The first place that it has to begin is in our own proximity. It was interesting to me that in the Quran, Muhammad was saying, God wants us to treat our families well, to give sustenance to our families. And so one day when I was giving my sister a larger than usual birthday gift, she said, oh, you shouldn't do that. I said, oh, no, there's definitely a surah in the Quran. In Islam, they believe that you should be very good to your family. And she said, oh, I'm becoming a Muslim tomorrow. The truth of the matter is, we're surrounded by people all the time whom we could serve anywhere. I'll never forget the time I went to have gasoline put in my car. It was very cold, and the young man who was bringing the gasoline hose to the car was shivering. He was a thin little guy, and I said, don't you have a sweater? And he said, no. And I said, well, just wait here. I'll go home, and I'll bring you back a sweater. Well, of course, the sweater was my husband's, and I did not ask my husband's permission. So he was not exactly charmed by the story, but but I did run home and get him the sweater. I mean, how could you do that? How could you stand by when I had people who came into my office who hadn't had breakfast? And I knew that they didn't have breakfast. You can tell when somebody hasn't had breakfast. And I said, oh, this can't go on. I never had a day when there was not a large bowl of fruit and crackers and cheese, because I didn't want to talk to somebody who was hungry. I kept on feeling hunger. And that's the way we should operate. We should really be very, very high in our awarenesses of everywhere that we are. That's a help that's doable. You know, I can't really go and help somebody in Africa at the moment. You know, the day may come, but right now it's not happening. But I can do a lot wherever I am. So that's the way that we're trained to be neighbors and to be loving and to, you know what? All of that is something that takes a little work. So when we wake up in the morning, if that really is our intention, by nightfall, we should have seen many good things happen as a result of that awareness. You're welcome. Yes?
If you like, would you care to say a couple of words about the practice of the spiritual practice of raising children and raising children with the awareness of being observed?
Well, you have spoken to the right person. I have 5 children who are true humanitarians, and not because I raised them to be. I always consider this to be the blessing that came from my mother and father. It's true that they have seen me always in service, but I didn't tell them what they should do. They are amazing. Now they are raising me. They are the ones who, in the absence of Bawa Mahiyadeen as a physical person, will physically tell me what I have done wrong all the time. And this is, if one takes this as a blessing, one is doing well with it. I was describing this to people in the fellowship, and I said, now, if you are not blessed with 5 children, as I am, who will tell you what you're doing wrong, find a good friend who will tell you this and continue to progress. But that really is the way it is. Yes.
Can I just add to what you just said?
Yes.
I have an 18-year-old son named Matthew.
Yes.
And about 3 years ago, when I was very concerned whether he was responsible enough to carry on his duties as a student, which
yes.
was somewhat flaky in, at 3:30 in the morning, I went into his room because I felt alive, and I said, Matthew, have you done your homework? No, I'm getting to it. So I said, you know, Matthew, it troubled me. In order for something to grow, you have to place it in the ground, you have to nurture it, you have to mind it, you have to shade it, you have to prune it, you have to give it everything you can so it grows. You're not doing that with your life right now. And he swung around in his chair.
chair, and he said to me, "Mom, if it's night and you cannot see the seed grow, does that mean it doesn't grow?" Oh. And at that moment, my fears about my son
diminished.
So I know beautifully what you say about learning from our children, because he always puts me back.
Yes, it's, you know, they are adults at a certain point and quite quite clever. Yes.
How did you
children about God? Well, the interesting and easy way is to point out a light bulb and to entitle the child to know that the power that actually generates the light is not seen. We see the light bulb. We see it in all of its colors. But the power is mysteriously creating the light. So that's a beginning. People are so really distracted by form that they barely ever get to essence. And that could become kind of a game, to try to find out what is the essence of something. Some things really will defy that. But a lot of times, as Bauer would say, you have to feel the hand within the glove. It's very, very important to know that things are not just the outer things that they seem to be. And it could be a fun practice, really. So I hope that that would help. Yes?
What kind of awareness are you, do you have of Baba now?
You know, I'll tell you something interesting. Some time back, before Baba passed, actually, it had to do with my mother and my father, but mostly my mother, who is really... she's in me. I realized that all those who had passed, who were close to me, had a part of me with them. So now a part of me is already on the other side. And I most certainly have part of them inside me as I stay here in this physical state. And that finished the veil between life and death, supposed life and death. So the veil that would be thought to exist in the fact that Bauer's body was not with us. Don't make no never mind. I really don't put any emphasis on bodies. I know how illusory. I know how illusory we are. So once you know, I mean, once you know something, you should allow it to be your knowledge. It should be okay after that. You shouldn't have to go back and reinvestigate, you know, recreate the wheel each time. And I don't. I really have this understanding, and so the flow of it never gets interrupted. But you know, a lot of this takes a lot of like just sitting around and not thinking about anything, and then the point comes up from a pondering or a questioning that has taken place earlier that didn't get resolved. So that the question sort of like lies inside of us, and a day comes when suddenly the question is answered. In the beginning, Bauer used to talk about the unatom in the atom. Talk about, you know, how people used to say oxymorons, an unatom in the atom. What is that? And for months, the unatom in the atom bothered me. And I was walking down Chester Street one day, looking in the window, and suddenly it said, "God isn't an atom." And I said, "Right. That's the unatom that is in all the atoms." What took me 6 months? It took 6 months. But the question
was there for the moment when I would not be thinking about it, and it was answered. And actually, that portion of us that is the most valuable is the un-atom in our atom. And the un-atom that prevails everywhere, atomless. It's just wonderful, really. But I spend my days, as I say, wondering and pondering. Wondering is the beginning, and pondering is after I get some answer to really break it down and take a look at what it is. So wondering and pondering is my method. It's a good method. Yes.